relationship. It's just logistics of modern living. Well, not always. Bhakti Raghav Swami is staying for 2 years in Hebron, so at least those disciples who are with him there will have his association regularly. This is a letter from a female married disciple living in America to myself. Hare Krishna, dear Guru Maharaj. Well, as a point of etiquette, although it's always good to say the holy names, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that we shouldn't write Hare Krishna as the first thing in a letter, because then you become the Namopadeshta. You're telling others to chant the holy names, which is not, well, unless you're the guru of the person, it's not appropriate. Most people don't know that, so I'm not blaming the devotee. Please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Okay, that's a very good start to the letter. Short letter. I am certainly most fallen and the worst sinner, so I am writing to you. I am extremely miserable and struggling very, very hard to exist in my current situation and circumstances. Please give me mercy in some form so I can remain Krishna conscious and carry on with my devotional services and duties. Please forgive me, Hare Krishna, your very fallen servant. And gives the name. Oh, bring all the other, bring the other malas from the room. So she seems to be going through a particularly difficult period. I'm not sure exactly what's the particular difficulty, because she hasn't said. Often devotees presume that their guru is omniscient, that he knows everything that's going on in their life. But even Srila Prabhupada, he didn't claim such omniscience. When he was asked, how did he know what was going on with all his disciples? He said, I asked my temple presidents if I need to know. Otherwise, it's just generally presumed that they're engaging in devotional service, that's all. And that is, give me mercy in some form. Now, the guru, as we know from, well, it's just such, I was going to quote that first verse of Guru Vashtakam, but it is just the whole conception of guru in the traditional conception is someone who's very merciful. In the modern age, in modern English, guru has come to mean someone who you go to a course on motivational speaking or personality development or something like that. You pay them some money and they're a management guru or computer guru or something like this. But guru has much deeper meaning than that. Specifically, in bhakti line, even in the Advaita line, the guru is taken as a personification of the mercy of what the impersonal Brahman or whatever. So we sing samsara dava nalaliyuta loka charnaya karanya ghana ghana praptasya kalyana gunarna vasya vandega roshi charnaya vindam. So the guru receives mercy from the ocean of mercy, who is Krishna. Krishna is the ocean of mercy. But practically, to benefit from the ocean water, one has to. The cloud is more practical for that. The cloud practically gives that. But we should also understand the guru is a teacher. That's another, that's the basic meaning of a jnana-data. Upadekshyanti te jnanam. They will initiate you into knowledge. So both factors are there. Often the factor of mercy is overly stressed. And the factor of giving knowledge, and also the factor that Srila Prabhupada, he would always translate guru as spiritual master. Although often nowadays in our society it's translated as spiritual teacher or spiritual guide, but Srila Prabhupada said spiritual master. Which is is completely in accord with the tradition. It's not that, especially in the bhakti tradition, that the instruction of the spiritual master is the life and soul of the disciple. So please give me mercy. Well, it's not that it's not there. It's always there, but we have to take it. There is nothing to prevent us completely surrendering to Krishna at any moment except our willing obstinacy to not do so. That our willing obstinacy is deep-rooted means we have to have a guru to guide us toward that point of full surrender. Because we know we want to go there, but we have deep-rooted obstinacy. But the basic instructions are there for everyone to follow. And really one just has to follow them very carefully. And all mercy will be there. Now, there is also the point of guru and gurus. The guru of everyone in the Krishna Conscious Movement in the modern age, well, specifically the International Society for Krishna Conscious, is Srila Prabhupada, whose instructions we can access very easily because he's kindly made them available by writing so many books. And many acharyas have written many books, but we may say it's our bias, but we find that by reading particularly Srila Prabhupada's books, we find that Srila Prabhupada, if Srila Prabhupada is directly speaking to us and cutting our misconceptions and giving us the energy required to perform devotional service. So really, Acharya in the modern age within ISKCON should direct us toward Prabhupada. And just, yeah, a personal role to follow. His personal role is there also, no doubt. How to, in your own particular situation, how you can practice devotional service, what is best for you, some details. But as no details of this situation have been given, I can't say. Now, another factor is that, yeah, the guru may personally guide you, but there's a limit to how much any person other than Krishna can personally guide how many people. Srila Prabhupada himself, many times he was written letters by disciples, and he would say, you ask your temple president for guidance. Because Srila Prabhupada, being very practical, knew that he couldn't personally guide every single person, every single disciple in Krishna consciousness. He said that all of his disciples should have 10,000 disciples, but he initiated a little less than 5,000, but he didn't attend the impossible by trying to personally guide them in every step. He did have his leading disciples come and spend time with him as his secretary. He would rotate them. And his Srila Prabhupada would, in this way, guide some leading disciples who were expected to guide others. And in this way, the guidance would filter down, and then Prabhupada's instructions are there in his books also. So, Vande Gurun are the first two words of... anyone? Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Offering obeisances to the gurus. Vande Gurun Isha Bhaktam. So we also have the prayer. Vande Ham Sri Guru. I offer respect to the guru. And then Sri Gurun, and to all the gurus. So the guru term is also, apart from the spiritual guru, there's also, it's used in a wide way. Guru means elders, means specifically the parents, the husband. So we should also take shelter of gurus as much as they teach about Krishna consciousness. If they don't teach about Krishna consciousness, then is not very helpful, which is often the problem, because people really do only have one guru. If their husband isn't Krishna conscious, or their wife isn't Krishna conscious, or there's no one around them who's Krishna conscious. But in this case, the Mataji who's writing is married to a devotee who is a good Krishna conscious devotee. So in this instance, I would advise her to, you can take shelter of your husband. It's very difficult for women in the modern age to even think like that, because they're trained in a different way. But this is what we learn from, well, I learned it from Prabhupada. I wasn't raised in this tradition. Devotees often say I'm very conservative or this and that, but it's not that I was raised in a very conservative family. Not at all. I mean, it was neither very liberal nor very conservative. Just, you know, it's a normal family in the West, which by Indian standards is not at all conservative. This so-called conservatism, I just learned it from Prabhupada's books, that's all. Otherwise, where would I have learned it from? So, women who are fortunate to have a good Krishna-conscious husband should learn to take shelter. And those who don't, well, they should. Still, they have to worship. This we find in Srimad Bhagavatam. Repeatedly, the term is used there, Pati Devata, which is translated as a woman who has such an attitude to see her husband as God is described as chaste woman, but there's no real proper translation in English for the whole cultural understanding that goes with that. Anyway, please give me some mercy in some form. Well, you can send us some mercy and give some service. You can ask Nitai Chaitanya to send her some transcribing. There's so much transcribing work to be done. So please take that. And remain steady in Krishna consciousness. That's all. The process is very simple. But we are slaves of Maya. But if we stick to the process, then Krishna will help us. So I can encourage you. There's no magic wand, just get a, you know, special mercy. We talk about special mercy. But special mercy comes to those who really try to do something very special in the service of Krishna. Those are the ones who get the special mercy. If you think that I won't You know, I'll just go along in a lackadaisical way, not trying very hard, and I'll get some special mercy. That is a cheating process. So that's why I say we often emphasize mercy to the extent that the very function of the guru is like taking the alcohol out of beer or something. There's nothing left. You know, people drink beer because it's alcoholic, but if you take the alcohol out, then it's looks like it, tastes like it. I mean, I never drank denatured beer, but just an example. What is the what gives it its oomph is missing. Of course, in Russia, they don't consider beer even alcoholic, right? It's just considered like lemonade or something. Alcohol means vodka. Really? That's their. They sell on the street. They have these huge tankers of that drink with some alcohol, and people can just come. It's just like drinking lemonade or something. I think in your country they have that also. Isn't it? No, only in Russia. So it's like there's the guru is supposed to give spiritual knowledge, spiritual instruction. If it's just only the taste is there. There's no instruction. It's just mercy, 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 and then I don't have to do anything. It's just mercy, that's all. But there are instructions to follow them. If you follow them, you get the mercy. So please go on in Krishna consciousness. There will be tests, for sure. Welcome the tests, because without them we can't become Krishna conscious. So don't become discouraged. Keep on going. Okay, now I'll go to the second letter. Do you want to stop this or not? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And in this letter, devotee has written and has expressed the problem. And the problem that he's facing. And you know what? It's the same problem that we're all facing. And that's why I asked for this morning class to be in the prasadam room. You may be wondering why it's in the prasadam room and not in the temple room. Because these are the kind of things that we don't talk about usually, and we may not want to talk about this in front of the deities. We don't really want to talk about it at all, but we should talk about it because it is the problem that we all face. It's a three-letter word beginning with S, and the last letter is X, and the word is not six. And it's not the American spelling of socks either. A-E-I-O-U. Okay, so anyway, I think you all understood what it was, and it's the problem that Lord Brahma faces. That's why he's in the material world, and it's the problem that the ants crawling around are facing. They don't have any philosophical idea of this. And we're all facing it. And in Kali Yuga, it's such a situation. We want to be Krishna conscious. But in Kali Yuga, our ability to philosophically understand anything is less. Our willpower is less. And so, which makes it harder to control the mind from the outset. And on top of that, the whole culture is completely polluted by sexual, vulgar propaganda. So from outside and inside, we're in a very difficult situation. So this is the situation described. There's a householder devotee who I've known for quite some years, I'm aspiring to take initiation from you since 2004. That's 8 years. He hasn't taken initiation yet, or he's chanting 16 rounds. There are four regulated principles, and often devotees come and say, well, I'm having problems following the fourth principle, which then you know what it is. Because practically most of our devotees don't have so much problem with gambling. Practically, I don't even know any devotee who had any problem with that. Why, you're gambling? You know. Yeah, yeah, you said the same thing 2 days ago in a lecture. Okay, meat eating, well, some do go back to meat eating, but it's usually not the prime cause of their falling away. And intoxication, well, some devotees do have a problem with that. But the one that everyone has a problem with is you know what. So, generally, and we generally don't like even to discuss this much, but actually we should. Prabhupada said we should, and he said it in very graphic terms, which I'm not going to repeat here because there are ladies present. Prabhupada didn't say it in any insulting way to ladies, but anyway. So no illicit sex means sex is only allowed for procreating Krishna-conscious children and should, for initiation, should we follow to this level? Yes. So he's trying to come to that standard, but he's failed many times. Moreover, I'm not able to discuss my problems fully with the devotee who's guiding him because that devotee is a brahmachari. And generally, you don't want to take this to sannyasis either. But at the same time, sannyasi is supposed to guide everyone, and this is the problem. So it should be discussed. I mean, it is discussed in a general way. We find that throughout the Bhagavatam. Yan maithuna digrihamedi sukham hituchham kandu yanena karyo eva dukkha dukkham tripanti neha kripana bahudukha bhaja kanduti vanmanasi jang vishaheta dhiraha. Prahlad says that the happiness of family life, beginning with sexual indulgence, is simply insignificant. It's like the happiness that you get by scratching when you have an itch. You scratch to relieve it. But the only problem is that it gets worse when you scratch it. Therefore, a sober person tolerates the itch. He doesn't scratch it. There's just one of them. There's also that Striya pungsa mituni bhavameta tayoraho hridaya granthimahu ato griha kshetra sutapta vitair janasya moho yamahamameti. Material life begins, or the bondage of material life is the bondage of attraction between male and female. And that becomes tighter and tighter because that expands, that attachment expands into attachment for home, country, friends, relatives, money, and in this way one is bound up in the illusion of thinking in terms of I, me, and mine. So this is the problem for everyone. I said it's Lord Brahma, it's sannyasis, brahmacharis, you know, this is not a bash the grihastha class, because we're all being bashed by the same maya, that's all. Although, generally we see if a brahmachari is having a lot of problems, it's not what the problem is. The problem, what they think is the problem, is not the problem. It's their own agitation due to sexual attraction. But marriage is not in and of itself a solution. It's you put yourself in the safety area that you can't have any gross fall down. if you stick to the principle of being an honest householder. Within this email, this devotee has written to me what another devotee, a Grihastha devotee, had written to him. So he writes, another Grihastha devotee wrote to him, "Sometimes Srila Prabhupada said that no illicit sex means no sex outside of marriage." That's true, at least once he wrote that in one letter. "And at other times I've heard it says that it means sex for anything else but procreation." Yeah, I'll add a little to that. He also stated very, very clearly that contraception is demoniac. Generally we think that abortion is demoniac, but even artificial contraception is demoniac. As far as I know, we are the only sampradaya that puts such a strict emphasis on this. I would qualify that by saying we. When you say sampradaya, you might think the whole Gaudiya Vaishnava sampradaya, but I would think specifically Srila Prabhupada put a lot of emphasis on this. But one reason for that is because, as I understand it, is that because previously in India it was understood. Prabhupada, he wrote a lot about, and he spoke a lot about the sexual attraction being bondage, but that was understood within the broader Indian culture. And it was understood, I mean, why are sannyasis considered so honorable? Well, the main reason is because they don't have any sexual relation. They're supposed to be beyond that. And another thing is that in the modern age, the sexual attraction has been so much ratcheted up. It wasn't previously like that. There's no doubt that sexual attraction is the binding force in the material world, and it's there from the time of creation and even before. In the modern age, that propensity, which is understood by spiritually minded people, is instead of like keep it under control, it's been okay, let it out and let's have. This came from, to a large extent, this came from Sigmund Freud's disastrous speculations with the idea that suppression leads to various forms of psychosis. But we see that now it's all allowed, and have sex before marriage, after marriage with someone else, or outside of extramarital sex. It's there, but it's not that people are psychologically better. Rather, in the modern age, people are more crazy, which we can understand from Bhagavad Gita, that dhyato vishayam pungsang sangas teishu prajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodho vijayate krodhat bhavati sammoha. And it goes on, but beginning with kama, lust, the downward spiral leads to bewilderment. And then sammoha, smriti vibhramaha, smriti vrangshad buddhi nasha, bewilderment, and then intelligence becomes completely bewildered, just completely lost, spoiled. When I say spiritually minded people, of course it's there in Buddhism, Jainism, which come out of Vedic culture, Hinduism, whatever. At least in the Catholic tradition, in Christianity, it's understood that sex isn't so good. That's why the priests are supposed to. But in the Protestant tradition, they have the idea that, it's a gift from God to enjoy. So actually, out of the Catholics and the Protestants, the Catholics in many ways much better. And in Islam also, they, maybe not in Sufism, which is considered heterodox anyway, by the Sunnis who consider themselves the real Muslims, but it's, yeah, generally in Islam it's considered, you know, it's God's gift, and that's what you're a Muslim for anyway, because if you're a good Muslim and you cut off the heads of enough kafirs or whatever, then you can go to paradise and you can enjoy any number of virgins. It means they have to have a production line of virgins for you to join, enjoy eternally. So it's, we can't, if people who say all religions are the same, then it's a very superficial statement. That really we can understand that one of the first step in spiritual understanding is to understand this material world is miserable. And then, if we can understand, and then to see, janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam, birth, death, old age and disease are miserable. What's the cause of all this? Desire, material, the desire to enjoy the senses, and the strongest is sexual attraction. Daivihi esha gunamai mama maya duratya. This maya is very difficult to overcome. And the principal manifestation of that is sexual attraction, which is absurd if you think about it. I mean, why should a pure jiva identify with the body and be attracted to another body, which, as Srila Prabhupada often described, is simply a bag full of blood. Well, it's the Rukmini, says, we find in her, when she's speaking to Krishna. The body is a bag with some hairs on the outside, filled up with blood, stool, mucus, bones, and you can say better than me, doctor, what's inside that bag. Whatever it is, doesn't look very nice. Doesn't smell nice. You don't feel attracted to touch. However attractive the body may be, if it's just slit open, you don't want to put your hand inside, right? It's the same thing. So it's not attracted to see or touch or smell. And you don't even want to hear about it. It's so unattractive. So the power of Maya is so strong that one is attracted to that which is intrinsically not attractive. Okay, let's get on with this. Yeah, here we come to the crux of the problem, that no illicit sex. But, realistically, we are not always so high and thus not ready for this. I mean, that is a practical consideration. That, especially in the modern age, because from a young age, and I mean, even in when I was growing up as a kid, it was bad enough. But kids growing up now, they have access to the internet. And the biggest industry on the internet is pornography. And even it's become the accepted within society that even people who are supposed to be giving proper direction, I'm talking about India here, I'm not talking about the West, which is, you know, already way, way gone, far gone. But even people who you'd hope to give better instruction, they actually encourage, you know, masturbation and extramarital sex and all this kind of thing. Masturbation's good, right? Yeah, I mean, he's a doctor. They're encouraging it. I know you're not encouraging, but within the medical profession, that's the norm. Yeah, Gokul Chandra told me last night. I was going to speak on this anyway, not just. So it's, even we want to be Krishna conscious, but because of that kusangskara, or bad impressions in the mind, it can be very difficult to do so. as a result, I'm reading from this letter from the devotee in America, when people try to follow this too strictly, I've seen bad results, such as devotees indulging in porn, adultery, etc. Now we say, when we say too strictly, actually you can't be too strict with a good thing, but here too strictly means beyond the capacity of the devotee, given the weakness of their own mind and their conditioning, to follow. So you want to be very, very, it's just like, I don't know now, but when I joined, it was a common thing that we'd see brahmacharis who just like eat very little, sleep very little, just take whatever they eat would be very, very simple. And they go on for 4 or 5 days like this. Then they'd eat so much, like about 6 meals all at once, and then go to sleep for 24 hours. So it's like, you know, they're like trying to artificially control the senses. But then their willpower breaks down, and then they just completely indulge, and then again they'll go, and then I didn't make it. And then again they try and it doesn't work. So therefore, a regulated program, taking prasad, taking rest, as much as we need, without trying to artificially come to a level that we're not ready for. Actually, we should all be like Raghunath Das Goswami. Practically give up eating and sleeping. That's what we should do, actually. But we're not capable of that. So let's follow in his footsteps by taking Krishna prasadam in a regulated way. So the same thing with sexual indulgence. We have the rule, but often following it seems to be beyond the capacity of devotees to do so. So how should we solve this problem? I know of one time, this devotee in America is writing, where a female disciple went to Srila Prabhupada and told him, my husband is cheating on me with prostitutes. To this, Srila Prabhupada asked why, and she replied, because he can't follow the no illicit sex principle strictly. Probably the female disciple, her husband was also a disciple of Prabhupada, because that's how it was in those days. That the grihasthas, we didn't find so much that there were one spouse a devotee and another not a devotee. It was almost all, they were all devotees. So if you went to the prostitute, I mean, it's pretty bad. So Prabhupada instructed her that she should have sex with her husband when he wanted, and this would solve the problem. This story was related to me personally by Vakreshwar Pandit Prabhu. And generally that's the advice that we give nowadays to ladies whose husband wants more than the strict rule, is to indulge and then gradually bring him to the proper standard. Because if you just break the marriage, for a start, that's adharma to do that. It sets a bad example, and it's emotionally devastating, and in so many ways, divorce is bad. Or even not divorce, but adultery. If the man goes to prostitutes or corrupt someone else's wife, then you could say it's the better of two evils to indulge the husband rather than having him becoming adulterous or breaking the marriage altogether. And like I say, this is why I'm discussing it in this room here. We don't usually like to. These are very unpleasant subjects to discuss, but it is the reality that we are facing. And we're preaching, and we're asking people to come to Krishna consciousness. But these are very real problems which devotees face, and we're all facing. Brahmacharis, as much as we're not Krishna conscious fully, it's because of the attraction, sexual attraction. So, Now, this is right. I do not know if Maharaj, referring to myself being such a strict renunciant, at least I'm considered strict. You just see how fallen society is. Would want to answer such a question? No, I definitely don't want to answer it, but you know, I consider I'm duty bound to do so. After all that I have seen, I am happy if a family can just stay together and be happy, which is quite rare these days, even among devotees, or maybe especially among devotees. If that means that they have to have sex once a day, I'd rather they do that than get a divorce and ruin their lives, or the lives of their children. So in conclusion, I feel, and this is just my opinion, that if you no longer indulge in pornography and whatever else comes with it, and if you are content to have sex with your wife in some regulated fashion without contraception, then I would recommend that you are ready for initiation. A lot of questions come out of this. Maybe then we should just make initiation for very few. Are we diluting the principle by initiating those who can't strictly follow it? It would seem like that. Of course, if we take it that sex within marriage without contraception, the kids come, you have to look after them. I know some of my godbrothers who have had plenty of children, and that's the way they follow. And they've gone on in their lives serving Krishna. I would think that's better. Absolutely no contraception. But then you have to have kids. You have to take the natural result. And don't think the kids are just, you know, some kind of garbage that fell out of the mother's stomach. You know, no, but you have to look after them in every respect. And it's a very serious, I mean, if you think about it, it's very, very serious looking after children. The results of, nowadays they have all this contraception, but the natural result of sexual activity is children. It's a very, very heavy responsibility in every way. I mean, parents are mostly worried about the economic responsibilities of raising children in the modern age, but apart from that, there's the responsibility of delivering them back to Godhead, that's even much greater. So, Guru na sasyat, Janani na sasyat, Pita na sasyat, Patischa sasyat, Devanga tatsyanna patischa sasyat. Devanga, I missed that one. It's a very heavy responsibility to be a guru, father, mother, relative, to take respect from anyone unless you can deliver them back to Godhead. Well, then a question may come, well, okay, I have plenty of kids, but then the wife is... Another thing is Srila Prabhupada wrote very clearly in one letter not to use the wife as a machine for sex. Then, another consideration is, all right, so there's 9 months of pregnancy, and according to Bhagavatam, they can go on having sexual relationships with the wife even in the first months of pregnancy. It's there in Bhagavatam. With Indra's curse, which he shared one quarter to the women, that's the blessing they got from Indra. But then, before attempting to conceive, you have to wait at least 6 months after delivery. So, practically speaking, you have to live as a celibate. If you have one wife, you have to live as a celibate. Most of the time, anyway. Well, then the thing comes up, well, you can have more than one wife. Which, okay, why not? It's illegal, unless you're a Muslim, in this country. Funny country, I have different laws. If you're a Muslim, you have different laws. But anyway, the Hindus, in Hindu law, you know, we read, how many wives did Chitraketu have? 1 crore wives. So, well, we're not recommending 1 crore. But 1, 2, 3 was quite normal until Nehru, in his wisdom, revised the law which had been coming down since time immemorial to have only one wife. So, anyway, you can still do without it being officially registered. You can have more than one. And that's good also. I mean, if you have the financial capacity and the emotional capacity to support, and if the wives agree to it, the first wife agrees. There are so many devotee women who, girls who need husbands, but nowadays they may not agree also. They'd rather go unmarried. There's so many discrepancies in the modern age, and to get people to understand all this is, to understand all these points is very difficult. We have to preach about it. Srila Prabhupada famously said that, although he did say that polygamy should be allowed in Vedic society, he said we cannot allow it in our society. But I don't see that nullifies all his previous instructions on that, but rather that those who are office bearers of the society and who are like, say, a temple president, grihastha, and they're receiving their maintenance from being maintained by the temple, that they shouldn't be polygamous. But you know, if a man is dharmic, he's not just simply lusty, then, and he has the financial and physical and emotional capacity to support more than one wife, then I'm for it. Let them do it. Now, another consideration is, what about the poor guru? There's a lot of outcry against the falling gurus, but that may well be one of the reasons. Initiating people are not following. That's also, you know, it does, you know, that's why it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said not to take many disciples, and Prabhupada said to take 10,000 disciples. It's not a small thing to take disciples. And so there's some thoughts from my side. Would any of you like to say anything? Because, you know, these are, as I say, very sensitive topics. We don't really like to discuss them very much, but we find from time, fall downs or gross fall downs, or gradually within our society the standards or lack of them of the broader society are becoming normal. Divorce and remarriage, for instance. Beating the wife, which is, it appears it was there in Vedic culture, and well, it definitely was in India. Yeah, it's been a normal, actually all over the world, but presumably not among, I mean, Srila Prabhupada wanted ISKCON, the central core, to be Brahmins, and I don't find in among Brahmins, I mean traditional Brahmins who are, means they're studying the Vedas, they're worshipping the deities. There's no wife beating in those communities. So this is the standard of culture that Srila Prabhupada wanted. And we're not going to be able to change the world unless we are significantly different from and better and setting an example. And what to speak of Varnashram? We can't have Varnashram if we don't have stable families, which means no illicit sex to this level. Keep it with your wife or wives, but not going beyond that. If going outside of that, then any Varnashram community will be spoiled. So these are all, you know, very crucial questions and not very easy ones to tackle. And, you know, we say we have problems in our society with, like I say, with gurus, it's usually considered the main problem. But the followers also, if the followers don't follow, then you know, the guru can be the best guru, but if the followers don't follow, then it's then the movement can't go forward properly. So any thoughts on this? I'm asking for feedback here because you know it's a very, very difficult question. So we should initiate or not? Is a devotee who's very, you know, he's very sincere about being Krishna conscious, but he has some bad habits, which... What do you think, Savyasati? You know exactly who I'm talking about. Yeah.
According to the scriptures already, this marriage is a regulation.
According to scriptures, marriage is already a regulation, yeah.
For the sex desire.
Mm.
And then we have limits in the form of the four different principles. But if for initiation we are going to compromise on these, then there will be no limits. And then it can go down to anything, directly to anything.
What are you saying? If we have regulations there within married life, but then... For initiation, we have other rules. Oh, there's an important thing I didn't say here now. That Srila Prabhupada, not only on this issue, but on many issues, he would speak very strongly. He would sometimes get angry or very heavy in classes. But individually dealing with devotees, he was often very lenient. I mean, just like in his book, he'd write that a sannyasi who leaves his ashram is like a Vantashi, one who eats his own vomit. But then actually, when his sannyasi disciples, they'd fall down, they'd come back and apologize, Prabhupada would be very opening and welcoming to them. So, he was very strong on this. But I don't see he was, you know, he didn't have any program for, you know, investigating what's going on in between the husband and wife. He didn't get involved. He never asked, you know, are you following, how strictly are you following, and all this kind of thing. And one devotee told me years ago that, I guess it was 75 or 76, that he'd got married, and then Prabhupada said to him after some time, so where are the children? He said, well, Prabhupada, we're not going to have children. He said, then why do you get married if you're not going to have children? Prabhupada expected that. Prabhupada wrote that also. That several times he quoted, putrate kriyate bharya. One accepts a wife for the sake of having a son. So, what are you saying? The initiation standards are there. Yeah, and that's a problem. If we say, well, it's okay that, you know, just... If you say it's okay to follow at a lower level, then the lower level becomes the standard. That is a problem. Everywhere, in everything we see. Just like if we say, well, it's okay if you... Sometimes if you eat a little kami food, you go to the restaurant and this and that, and then there's no standard anymore of only taking Krishna prasadam. Then it becomes fully acceptable and normal, not just occasionally, but whenever you feel like it, to just go and eat whatever you like, as long as it's vegetarian. So that is a danger also. That can we adjust the rules for people's incapacity to follow them? Then the rule is no longer a rule. So it is a very difficult question. Is that why the point you wanted to make? Yeah, what do you want to say, Chaitanya? Yeah. Grihastha asked you the same question, yeah. Right, right, you told me that, yeah. The wife is pushing. Yeah. He got married, and he's a devotee, and he expected that, you know, when we want to have a kid, then we'll have a kid. But she's immediately pushing, no, no, come on, we're going to enjoy ourselves now. Right, 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 right. I know many instances of this. I know one instance, one of my godbrothers, he was very strict. I don't know whether it came from his wife or from him, that, you know, we're only going to come together when we want to have children. They follow very strictly, but he was falling down with, you know, girls here and there. Like, he wanted to follow strictly, but Hare Krishna, he wasn't doing that. There's something else I was going to say, but I can't remember now. Maybe it'll come to my mind again. So, oh yeah, there was another case of one devotee got a he was Tamil Aya, actually. Okay? So he was in the West. And then it came out shortly after marriage that, it came out, because I knew him, and so we got all these mails from his wife, and this problem and that problem, and between them. But what it really came down to was that she wanted to follow strictly and he didn't. Because, you know, after all this, you know, she said this, he said that, and then one line, and I caught the essence of it. You know, what's the point of getting married anyway if you don't want to? And that was it. That was the point. And then shortly after that, they divorced. He got married again, and he's quite satisfied. He's going on as a devotee, doing service and everything, and I never suspect of him that he would have extramarital sex, but he has his wife. I think the best thing is that we always say, the sannyasi should always say, you have to follow very, very strictly. And then the grihastha devotees, the older ones, will take them to the side and just say something to them like that. But the sannyasi should never preach anything less than the full standard. Of course, it's not the kind of thing you want to preach all the time, but I mean, we do at initiation, we say no illicit sex. What do we do? If we say that you have to follow this strictly, that might actually be an impediment in spreading the movement. Because I don't know, and then why get married at all, actually? Unless you're just doing it for the sake of dharma. It's a very tough question, isn't it? Moon won't spread, there won't be. And yeah, and then, and it may give rise to hypocrisy also. The kind of hypocrisy that, you know, people say something very high, but they're, you know, going on the internet to pornography sites and this and that. So it would seem as a practical consideration that if someone's following everything else strictly, but then again, yeah, they indulge with their wife, but then they should have, you know, should have children. And actually, the devotee who wrote this, they're from America, not the devotee who, this is a letter within a letter. I remember he said to me some time ago, he said that if grihasthas aren't having many children, then they're having contraception. Which is another reason we should discuss these things, because it would seem that, judging by that, it would seem that we could guess that the use of artificial contraception is widespread within our movement. which is a lot worse than having children. Some grihasthas are, you know, controlled, but I think the majority, it's not that they become a devotee and all of a sudden all that bad conditioning just goes away. I don't think so.
Maybe after my marriage, many senior grihastha couples actually took us aside and gave us advice that it is okay to use contraceptives.
Recently, just after you were married, grihastha couple told you it's okay to use contraceptives. If you, it said if the urge is very strong, if you try to control it too much, you have problems. So we accept that if you try to, if you have that urge and you artificial or whatever try to control. But then, yeah, but I'm saying, okay, if that's a fact, then have children.
Yeah, I mean, that's how some devotees are preaching.
If some devotees are preaching like that, then yeah, then we're, that may be another reason for so many problems in ISKCON, is that there's so much illicit sex going on. Well, I know in the case of some grihasthas that they are controlled because they tell me, like, you know, we're not going to have children now, and I know they're not using contraception. We're not going to have children now. First, we're going to visit Mayapur and Vrindavan and this, you know, like this, something like that. So, I mean, there are. It's not that everyone's completely blown out and popped out, but many are. But the family life also, there can't be any real happiness in that if sexual attraction is the center. And probably young people who indulge in that, they after some time, I would think they just grow out of it, because believe it or not, it's not that much fun anyway. As one teacher at school told me once, self-realized teacher, he said, you know, all this sex, it's all advertises so much. We said, you know, you get married and it's not such a great thing anyway. I didn't believe him. Very intelligent teacher. I should try and contact him. He also said something else, I remember. He said the only good form of government could be enlightened dictatorship, but it's not possible. Very good man. Maybe I should try him. I only remember his second name. I mean, I can't remember hardly anything any of the teachers said to me at school, but I remember those two things. Words of enlightenment. Nothing to do with what was being taught in the classes. It's the same teacher who was studying sociology and was talking about all these fishermen and how they come to port and they get drunk and then they go out to sea again. And I said, this is nonsense. What do you want to study all this for? And he agreed, yeah, it's nonsense. What do you want, you know, just a... They have all these long terms about fishermen. They come, they spend all their money on booze, and then again they go out to sea. They have all these long Latin words to describe it. Someone did a 3 or 4 year study. Hey, that's what fishermen, that's what they do. What do you need to do a sociological study for? And then the poor kids at school, we have to study all this nonsense. So, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.